This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. It's been over 70 years since the end of the Holocaust, but the stories of survivors from this dark time in history are just as powerful and compelling today. For 10 years, Viterbo University in La Crosse has brought in a survivor of the Holocaust to share their story with the community through Viterbo's Teaching the Holocaust workshop. Joining us today is Holocaust survivor Magda Herzberger, a psychologist and author from Romania. Magda, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you.
You know, and as I mentioned in the introduction, you're originally from Romania, correct?
Yes, originally. I was born in the city of Cluj, which is the capital of Transylvania.
Do you want to tell us a little bit about your family and your childhood before the war?
Yes, Transylvania changed hands before the Second World War, or the First World War. It was a province in the Austro-Hungarian Empire, but you know, after the war, it was annexed to Romania, and then 1940, it was Hitler forced Romania to give up part of it, and then in 1944, Hitler occupied it. So the good times for us, Jewish people, you know, was in my early childhood. I had a very happy childhood, and my grandparents, in addition to their alcohol factory, and they had a mill, a flour mill, and they had also an estate. And it was beautiful, you know, in the summer especially, because the winters were very, very tough there. We had the Transylvanian Alps and the Carpathian Mountains, you know. Transylvania is surrounded by mountains. It's a very mountainous territory and very cold climate. On a holiday, we would go out to the farm, and they had cows there, and they had the chicken and an orchard, and us children were playing, you know, had many cousins. I was the only girl, and my grandmother adored me, you know, and I was kind of spoiled. Life was good for us, but things changed, and the thing changed drastically. When I became a young teenager, 11 years old, because at that time it was, you know, in the 30s, and especially the middle and late 30s, the middle of started already when Hitler was getting power, that the Romanian government was strongly drawn to Nazism and fascism, and they adopted Hitler's anti-Jewish policies. So for the first time, I experienced what it means to be Jewish, because we were discriminated. And they introduced anti-Jewish laws. And the one that really was affecting me, that was the first law, the law of numerous clauses, whereby only a very small percentage of Jewish people were admitted in high school. And if you were Jewish, you had to have an almost perfect grade average in order to even think of it that you can get into high school. My first day in high school was shocking, because all the teachers were very anti-Semitic, including the principal. And the moment they came in the first time, "Jews, stand up." That was the first thing that they said. And I was very offended. Why the Jews have to stand up? We found out later that if the Romanian did not answer, the Jew was asked, see? So we were terrorized, because you could not afford the bad grade. So you had to be 100% prepared just in case the Romanian is not going to not question. You knew that the Jewish students, we were only six Jewish students, you know. When we got out of the school, some students were good students. Others were anti-Semitic because of their parents. And they greeted us with very degrading limericks. They had a nickname for us, Jidan, not Jew, which is very degrading, you know. And then they were throwing stones, small stones after us. And I went home my first day of high school crying all the way home when I walked. And I asked my father, I said, why did they do this to us? We did not commit any crime. We don't deserve that. And my father said, well, I can't explain to you, but I give you a good advice. you make sacrifices for your studies. The sacrifice you have to make now is to tolerate the discrimination and keep your mouth shut, because if our parents would complain, I would be more discriminated. I would single out, you know. When the Germans came in, that was the apocalypse of all of us Jewish people. Then it was the real beginning, I would say, of the Holocaust. And everything took such little time, because they came and occupied our city, you know, the city of Cluj. And it was on March 27th, 1944. And then in April 1944, all of us of Jewish faith were forced to sew on our outer clothing the six-pointed yellow Star of David, which is the symbol of Judaism. But it had to be yellow because that symbolized the dirty Jew. And then in the middle, if somebody would know that we are Jewish, was a in big letters, Jew. From that time on, we were scared, because if you know, there were anti-Semitic elements, they felt free to beat you up, you know. And we went out only for absolutely necessary things on the streets. And then another month passed by. This was May 1944, when we were forcibly taken out of our homes. And we were taken out by a special Hungarian police called the gendarmes. They collaborated with the Nazis 100%, and they were just as evil and rude and cruel as the Nazis. So then we were pushed around. They brought into our house. We had to leave everything behind, the whole what was in the house. And then when we left the house, our homes were looted. Everybody could go in and pick up things that they want from the house. And then we were exiled in the so-called ghetto. Now, the ghetto was a territory located on the outskirts of the city at the site of an old abandoned brick factory. We lived there under terrible conditions. We slept on the ground, on a bare ground. We didn't have running water, and our nutrition was very poor. By the end of May 1944, we were taken out from the ghetto and deported to the German concentration camps in bolted railway cattle wagons. We were pushed into small compartments, 80 to 100 people. And we traveled in those trains for 3 days and three nights, with no food, no drinks, and no toilet facilities. In the corner of the wagon was put a pail for 800 to 100 people. That was our bathroom facility. And you know, we were men and women and children. it was a terrible ride. And after that period of time, we finally arrived to my first camp, Auschwitz-Birkenau.
You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're talking with Magda Herzberger, a survivor of the Holocaust from Romania. Magda's visiting La Crosse this week to speak at Viterbo University's annual Teaching the Holocaust workshop. And Magda, you were just talking about, you know, your arrival to the concentration camp in Auschwitz. And I know that Auschwitz is one of the most well-known camps from the Holocaust. You know, what was your experience like there?
I think that many people don't know what Auschwitz was really like. It's a different thing speaking about and describing, but being there. And I was there. When we arrived, we had to face a selection committee of the SS officers, headed by Dr. Joseph Mengele, who was one of the most notorious criminals, and I have seen him in the camp every single day, and the terrible deeds that he did. In my book, Survival, I give you testimony of my life daily life in the camps, in each of the camps. We were on a selection platform and waiting for the other prisoners to come out. My father and my uncle were at my side. We were ultimately separated. Then we were ordered by the SS officers to form two columns, men on one side, women and children on the other side. And at that point, I was separated from my father and uncle, and they both perished in the concentration camp of Dachau. And then the selections started, which were shocking and agonizing. Dr. Josef Mengele was the chief selector. He looked at you and decided whether you go to the left or you go to the right. All the people who were not considered useful, like children up to age 14, old people, sick people, the pregnant woman, the invalids, the mentally disturbed, they were motioned by Dr. Josef Mengele to the left. They were gassed and cremated in the killing facilities of Auschwitz. There were four killing facilities equipped with gas chambers and crematory ovens. So all these people who were not considered useful were gassed and cremated shortly after their arrival to Auschwitz-Birkenau. And many of my family members were in this category, all our little children in the family, pregnant women, old people, you know, my mother's aunts, uncles. I mean, it was a terrible thing what they did to us. And then those of us who were pointed to the right, I was young and I was a very strong girl because I was a competitive fencer, you know. I was selected for the gruesome task of dragging the corpses of the innocent victims, digging death pits where the bodies were thrown in, and put to fire, you know. Because at that time when I went there in 1944, the extermination was in its strongest time, you know. And all these transports came, and the Hungarian transports. So I don't know if people know that every day 27,000 Jewish people were gassed and cremated. They were also the political prisoners. They were nuns and priests, and all those people who did not agree with Hitler's anti-Jewish policies. But we were this crematory of innocent killing facilities at the beginning, you know, were established mainly for the destruction of the Jewish people. Auschwitz was also surrounded by barbed wire fences charged with high-intensity electrical current. Once you arrived to Auschwitz, you were not a person anymore. You had no name. You had a tag. At that time, they did not even took the trouble to tattoo you. I was fortunate that I wasn't tattooed, and on our whole transport wasn't tattooed. There were 44 barracks, you know, very primitive barracks with holes on the roof and in the walls between the wood planks, you know. We slept on the floor, 500 people, you know, and it was like sardines. I mean, we were a starvation diet. What we got, it was terrible, just a little coffee, they called coffee. It was black water and in the morning, and then nothing during the work, you know, nothing the whole day in the afternoon, a 6.5-ounce piece of bread, always stale bread, preferably black bread. And then it was a patch of margarine on it. Then the soup. The soup was the most disgusting thing because it had a foul smell, and then there was nothing else in it but slices of rutabago vegetable floating on the surface mixed with sand because they never washed anything. So that was our food. Daily food. Now you can imagine what it is like to work. We didn't get any fluids during the work. as morning started, our torture, I would say, started. They woke us up at 3:30 in the morning. We had to stand so-called roll call to be counted, and the German officials came, and then we had the block leaders who had to report, you know. And whether it was raining or whatever the weather was, we had to stand in line there, aligned. Life in Auschwitz was a nightmare, and reality became a nightmare. So and then there were additional selections at the end of each week, where the committee came in. You had to strip, and they looked at you, and they decided, are you going to live or are you going to die? So can you imagine what it was like, the fear at by the end of the week? Now they're coming, the committee. Are you going to be taken to the gas chambers, or are you going to be used as guinea pig in horrible medical experiments conducted in the laboratories of Dr. Joseph Mengele, or for other horrible purposes? I was fortunate. It was a miracle that I survived 7 weeks in Auschwitz. And after this period, I was taken with 500 other young women to my second camp, the camp of Bremen, in the city of Bremen. That's the second largest port in Germany. At that time, it was the wartime there. It was like being out in the war. The city was bombed day and night by the Allies, and then we were taken there for slave labor in order to clear the ruins of the city, to remove the bodies of the aerial bombing victims laying in the streets and under the rubble. These were the people who didn't find shelter in time, and they were hit by the bombs. We had to carry heavy stones, pipes, and bricks from the bomb buildings. And so I felt compassion for all the people who were victimized by the war. And I didn't know if I could survive those huge bombardments. Twice our camp was hit while we were working. And it was lucky that we were not in, because we would have perished, all of us. And we were happy whenever we found some rags or under the ruined homes. And we would wrap them around our hands and feet in order to prevent our extremities from serious frostbites. Serious frostbites ended up with amputations of feet, of toes and fingers. And those people who were in that terrible predicament were sentenced to death because they were not useful anymore. The harsh winter, the hard labor, the lack of food took a toll on us. We lost a great deal of weight. For the first time, we were considered not useful. And we knew by that time what it means. It's like a death sentence. So we were taken from Bremen, and we were forced to march 40 kilometers on foot, without food, without drinks, and whoever couldn't go on anymore was mercilessly shot by the SS guards.
You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're talking with Magda Herzberger, a survivor of the Holocaust from Romania. Magda's visiting La Crosse this week to speak at Viterbo University's annual Teaching the Holocaust workshop. And Magda, you just left off telling us about your arrival to the Bergen-Belsen camp.
We arrived in the middle of the night, exhausted. Half of us didn't make it. Half of us did not survive the death march. And it was dark because it was wartime. And I was at the end of a very long column. The women's barracks there were full. Nevertheless, the SS guards started to push in more and more people. The poor women were yelling, there's no more place, no more place. But they still pushed on and on. And at one point, there was no way you could push even one person in. And they said to us, those of you at the end of the column, just lie down for the night wherever you are standing. So we did. And in the morning, we were horrified to see the ground of Bergen-Belsen littered with thousands of corpses. And we found out that we were sleeping among them. The stench was terrible. The people in the barracks looked like walking skeletons. The barracks were infested with lice, rats, and all kinds of diseases. And people could not carry out their dead. So the dead was with the living in the barracks, and many of them had dysentery, and they could not reach the latrines. They were too weak, and they were lying helplessly on the wooden floor of the barracks in their urine and excrements. Why did they took us there? In order to clear the campground from the bodies, to dig the death pits where the bodies were thrown in and incinerated. And some of us, and those especially who came before us, were too weak to drag anymore the bodies. So they were ordered to strip them of clothing, and they were put up in a pile. We called it the Pyramid of Death, naked. By the end of third week in Bergen-Belsen, I was used up. And one day while dragging a corpse, I collapsed. And I collapsed by a trunk of an old tree. And I was by that time 19 years old. And I was lying helplessly, surrounded by corpses, waiting for death. I prayed to God to have an easy death. I prayed to God that I should be buried next by the roots of this birch tree, so that maybe I will be transformed in another form of life, and my spirit maybe is going to be taken to heaven. Honestly, I was in a state that I could not move anymore, I couldn't talk anymore, and then I heard big noises, commotion, screaming, and I was afraid to open my eyes. I thought maybe I'm on the other side, but what will I see, you know? But I couldn't help because the noise became bigger and bigger. And I opened my eyes. And what I saw, I thought either I am on the other side or this is a vision, this is a hallucination. I could see the gates of Bergen-Belsen opening, and I could see the British tanks coming in, the liberators. And I did know at that time that I will live, but miraculously I survived. And then later on in life, when I became a writer, I wrote my memorial poem, Requiem, for them. I have other memorial poems, but one of them is the Requiem. I am also a composer and a poet for many years. If you would allow me, I would like to recite to you my poem, Requiem. Is that all right?
Yeah.
Requiem. My eyes shed drops of tears into the pools of years for those I loved and lost. And like a hunting ghost, my spirit roams around, searching for their unknown burial ground. They were the victims of their fates, sentenced to death without a sin, for worshiping the only God they believed in. They died without protest, with no rebellion, together with the rest of 6 million innocent Jews in the Nazi camps of Germany. Oh, Lord, please help me to keep alive their memory. They died in vain. I witnessed their agony and pain. I heard their cries. Oh, Lord, our God, please open for them the gates of paradise. Let their souls rest in peace. Forgive mankind's atrocities.
And how has your writing and your music and your poetry, you know, how has that really helped you kind of work through these incredibly difficult experiences that you went through?
You know, when I came back from the Holocaust, I had to cope with a terrible grief that my family was annihilated. And also, I had to cope with the effects of the big frostbites that I had on my toes, and all my fingers were swollen and red, and I had a whole year treatment for them. And thank God, they healed. Then I also suffered for water retention due to effect of starvation. So it takes time to recover from the physical effects. But then the emotional effects, they are lasting a long time. The shadows of the Holocaust are still haunting me, because those are the horrific memories from the camps, which are buried in the depths of my soul. But from time to time, they surface and manifest themselves in different forms. You are going to find them in my poetry. You are going to find them in everything I write. You are going to find them in the stories in my book. And they also appear in my dreams in the form of very frightening nightmares. And those are the scars. They represent the scars of the Holocaust, which sometimes they take me to the desolate, arid, and forsaken desert of loneliness, where I am trapped and haunted by the dark shadows of melancholy. Now, this reflects in my poetry, you see. The Holocaust was the springboard of my writing. It stemmed from that great suffering, you know. And I wrote for 9 years poetry. I did not want to touch the Holocaust, because I felt that I don't want to evoke those memories. I suffered from nightmares for years. Even now, sometimes I'm screaming, you know, my husband is shaking me.
Magda Herzberger, Holocaust survivor from Romania, is here with us today to talk about her life and her writing, thanks to Viterbo University's annual Teaching the Holocaust workshop. Coming up, we'll talk with La Crosse County's new Health Department Director for National Public Health Week. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. To hear audio archives of today's show, visit our website, wpr.org/newsmakers. Our site also has archives of other past editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make suggestions for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers. For updates on future shows, links to our archives, and more, like us on Facebook at WPR Newsmakers.